Lota Kelly. It's August 19th, 2004. We're speaking to her in Cove. And the first thing I would like to ask you is if you would say your full name.
My full name, mm-hmm. Lota Mary, M-A-R-I-O-N, Kelly. No, Pearson. That was my full name.
Oh, okay. So Lota Marion Pearson Kelly. All right.
Well, the Kelly didn't come until long many years
ago. I see. When were you born?
In 1904 in Albion, Idaho, in southern Idaho.
All right. And your husband's name was?
Cecil D. That stood for nothing except a D. Uh-huh. Kelly.
All right. When did you first come to La Grande, Oregon?
When did we come to La Grande? Mm-hmm. Well, on the morning of June
You don't have to remember the exact day.
If you were 8 years old, it would have been 1912.
I was 9 years old.
Okay.
No, wait a minute. When we first came into the bed. Yes. I was 9. And the first view I had of La Grande was of a tremendous lake. And we came from southern Idaho where it was very dry. And I remember screaming, Mama, look, we live where there's a lake, a big lake. And she said, no, dear, there isn't any lake here. It's all flood.
Oh.
And that was my first introduction. The Grand Grand Valley. And we came here across town into the Grand, and that was before Cove or Union, any of them were. That is not my children. But then we went straight to the Grand, and we had friends waiting for us there.
Who were your friends that were waiting for you in
the
Grand?
Well, the last name was Evans. And you don't know about this, but there was a steel bridge that crossed the Grand Ronde River. Well, where the beautiful big bridges are now, but this was before that. And the steel bridge crossed the Grand Ronde River. And that was our first introduction to a steel bridge. And this Evans family lived at the point of the hill. There was a house up there. Would have been one that you went down on the other side of the river to take the road that went up to the mountains. And that was my first home there. There's Evans family. You remember? Years ago, there was an Evans who was a barber.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. So that was the boy of the family. There was a boy and a girl. But they were older people and just treated us just royally and never forgot. They didn't have much, did we? So it was just one of those things.
Why did your family move to La Grande?
My oldest brother was 25 years older than I am, but he had a job with a, could have told you, but I don't know. Now, a job with the company who were paving Adams Avenue, and the paving started at what was the post office originally up there, down through probably Depot Street. And that was the first paving that there was. And he was working for that company. And he fell in love with the Grand. Just street you did after coming from Dry, Idaho, in a little town. And you had a really good job. And we didn't have anything. My mother was a widow, and there were four of us still in school. But we were used to doing everything that had to be done. And so anyway, we stayed with the Evans family just a few days until we found a house.
Mm-hmm. And what was your first house in the Grand that you stayed at? Where was it located?
Yes, I could tell you. You know where O Avenue is? Then the beautiful house on the corner. It's so beautiful. There, right behind that, was a smaller house. And that was the house we rented. And lived in that. And we, our front porch really looked up on the hill. And I had two boyfriends, and I was only 10 years old. And we got around there. And one of them had a horse, and he would ride it up on the hill and want me to go horseback riding with him. And the other one had a bicycle, and he'd ride it up to the porch and want me to go bicycle riding with him. And I said, no, I couldn't do that either. So, but they gave up after a while. I'm 10 years old, and I was kind of pudgy and had red hair and freckles. And but it picked people up just quite easily.
May I ask you a couple questions about your brother?
Yeah, we lived just a brief time there, and then we moved down on Washington Avenue, probably pretty close to what is now 7th Street, somewhere down there. And then later, a couple of years later, we lived on the corner of N and Cedar. It was a big two-story house and had a big yard on it. And for years there's been a gas station there or something. Mm-hmm. And there isn't. But Palmer's, Dean Palmer and his mother and dad built the house. It's just off from the corner. And they had marvelous Gravenstein trees in their yard. And I laughed and laughed after the first time I went there, because those were the trees that were in our yard when I lived on the corner house.
Almost
in the way. I don't really know what she laughed about, because to this day she still picks apples off from them. Not as good as she did, because she's moved away, of course. Mm. But she was in and out there a lot, and I used to laugh. And he had a date with her brother. My brother had a date with Otis Palmer's sister. And the only way he could get out to take her date was to climb out the back window through that apple tree and get out. Funny how you remember things like that.
Do you remember when the paving was happening on Adams Avenue, the paving? What was your brother's job to do that paving?
Well, I'm not sure about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. He was just a daily worker there, mm-hmm. laborer, I would say. He had no special training. The only thing he ever had that was special was military service.
Oh, I see.
And he had gone through the Spanish-American War and World War I. And then World War II, he loved soldiers. He did that.
What was his name?
Irwin Pearson.
Irwin Pearson. Did he stay in the Grand, or did he move on?
Well, until there was another war. Uh-huh. And then he did. Uh-huh. But I had other grown brothers. Yeah, I had six brothers and four sisters.
Wow.
And we had a wonderful family. Like I said, we had nothing. and her family, but we loved it. And for the first summer we were here, one of my brothers had a contract with the city of Grand to bring their wood for their schools. They all burned wood, and he had a contract to supply them with the wood. So my mother took us after school up to the mountain, and we had a tent up there and spent a good bit of the summer up there. And we just really, we'd never been camping, you know, so it was all new for us. And they had a summer school up there because it was too cold in the winter for them to hold school. So they had a summer school, and it went from, I would say, late spring then until early autumn. But at that time, the wild strawberries were blooming. So Mother would pack our lunch and insist we go to school. We would go through with our grades, but we'd be way to get rid of us anyway. They needed more pupils in the school.
Where in the mountains was the school? What, do you remember?
Well, going up toward Perry to Glass Hill, then you went up the top of that hill. It was in that area. I think I could find my way now, but it's been many, many years.
What was the name of that school?
I don't even know. It was just a country school. Oh. But anyway, my sister and brother and I would stop on the way to school and pick our lunch bags full of strawberries, and we'd be late to school every day. And that wasn't good in the teacher's record. And also there was a little problem.
The inside of your school look like? I mean, that summer school. What did
it
look like?
Well, there were probably 10 students, and they just had books, and we didn't have any of these prepared books that have names on them and everything. I don't know too much about them now anyway. Mm-hmm. But we just had rough paper and pencils, and that was the style of it. We learned quite a little bit, I guess. But when early fall came, the school closed.
I see. Do you remember who taught up at that school?
So
it was a one-room school?
Yeah.
And how many students about were going
there? Oh, this is all guesswork. I would say about 10 people who were living up around or lumbering because they hadn't progressed that far.
Uh-huh.
But, just for wood, and I suppose just a place to live. I don't know, remember too much about it. Because I know when school started down here, we moved back to town and got started in school. And we never did go through that school again because we were always busy. And a little bit later, I always had a job. Mm. And wasn't much trouble finding work.
Mm-hmm. Which school did you go to down in the valley?
Central. Uh-huh. My brother, and he was snarly. He was two years younger than I am, but he was only 1 year behind me in school because he just skipped grades. He just learned everything so quickly. And I got excellent grades, but I worked for them.
So what do you remember about going to school at Central? What comes to your mind about your experience at Central School? What do you remember?
You mean right in Central School?
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. It was entirely different than the... Now, the school that I had attended as a child was the Idaho State Teachers College in our little town. Mm-hmm. And my sister is 3 years older, and when she was ready for kindergarten, she started to kindergarten. And just as quickly as she was out of sight, I fell over. And my mother had to go after me. The next morning, when Frances got started to school, I fell over again. It happened 3 times, and finally the teacher went home with me, and she told my mother that she only had 2 students in the kindergarten, and I was such a good little girl that she would welcome me as another of her students. So by the time I was 5 years old, I was doing teaching for the teachers. I mean, reading for the teachers. And I could read any books. I just kept right on going with it. That was kind of a boost right then, mm-hmm. because I could just pick up anything and read it, and I would remember what I read. Mm-hmm. So I went through school and awfully good grades, because I can remember I didn't have to study too hard.
Mm-hmm. What did Central School look like in those days? What did it look like? Was it a big building, small building?
Well, you mean the schoolhouse? Mm-hmm. Well, it was a nice big 2-story building, stone of some kind. I remember I had a blue skirt, kind of a narrow skirt, short, where I was just probably 12 years old. And it had stone banisters, so wide, to come out of the door. And we found out those were smooth, so we'd go out and slide down those banisters, and I wore a hole in my skirt, I had one for it. But it was all stone building, and I suppose there was a lot of brick involved.
Was that just the elementary school, or did other students?
That was just an elementary school, mm-hmm. and the high school, as people not too much older than you are probably remember, that the old high school building. Mm-hmm. And well, when they tore it down, you know, we saved the bricks. It didn't get passed, or it did get transferred. I had one of the bricks that had been finished and had a plaque on top with a picture of the brick on it. Mm-hmm. So I graduated of the same high school. Now, it had burned twice, I think. And one of the stories had been burned.
I think the 3rd story burned away, and so then they kept the bottom 2 stories.
Yeah.
I believe that's right.
I couldn't remember this exactly what it was, but I knew it burned. But it still kept the same school. Mm-hmm. And when I was teaching school years after that, I remember going back into the principal's office at the right of the stairway that went upstairs, and it was down on the ground floor, and I would go into the school superintendent's office and get my qualifications for teaching, and remembered that part of it. But they still maintained a gymnasium in the basement, mm-hmm. of that old building, and you'd go in on the, like the basement was made here, you go in on the a floor that came in on the top, pretty much, if you remember that, mm-hmm. and then you had to go downstairs to get into the to the gymnasium, it was that. All sorts of things going on there.
What kinds of subjects were you studying in elementary school? Was it reading, writing?
You study everything. The one that holds, and we had a teacher by the name of Mrs. Jackson. Very large woman. And we got her in the seventh grade as an English teacher. And I came out of that with a knowledge of England, of English, that very few people ever met. And when I was teaching, one of the students whose father was a teacher in college, I was teaching him English construction, and his mother came in. Now they live up on the hill, and if I can just think of their name, I could remember it. But she came in and asked my permission to come in while I was giving him his lesson. She said that he had never been able to get those, and she never had been able to before. Idan Anderson, and the boy was their oldest son. And he had fallen and had a very severe back injury, and for a whole year he had to sleep on the board. But of course he had his father teaching there. He was a brilliant child. But that whole semester when I was teaching this English construction, she was with every one of them except for Finger in her life. She had ever known. So this Mrs. Jackson was just marvelous. I think so many people talked about her because she went into things that should have been there, but they weren't. Mm-hmm. And what she knew about English was something. And then later she went to work in the post office, moving everything.
Don't remember that one.
And the mistress said she should never have left teaching. She was getting too old.
What were your after-school activities that you did when you were...
After school?
Uh-huh.
Well, trying to think, because I was busy, and I played the piano. So I had to have regular instruction on that activity. Well, I was busy. I went to work in an electric store with a Nash. And she taught me how to repair all small, electric iron and small electric thing. She taught me how to repair those.
Where was your shop located?
Downtown someplace. But she taught me so many things there that I was busy, you see. And then, you know, with my mother working and four of us at home, and we had to do everything. My sister just detested cooking, and I loved to cook, just didn't care what I had to cook. So on our days off, she would do the cleaning, have everything just spotlessly clean, and then I would usually do the washing and then do the cooking.
Did you shop at were there grocery stores that you shopped at for your food?
Oh, we could order our groceries. Almost always just order the groceries and they're delivered right to the house. I think if I remember right, we had to order before noon and then the groceries were delivered.
From a grocery store?
Never will forget. The first time I went into Joel's grocery, he was there. And I don't know how much she knew him, but he had a little part of his raising wanted to be somebody. And his wife couldn't have cared. And she was just, it was her mother who ran the store. But he really just couldn't have cared at all. Then,
so he didn't like being at the store? Joel didn't like being at the store?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But he wanted to make sure that everybody, well, for instance, he spent the first month or so I was there trying his best to get to join the country club.
Oh, the country club?
Yeah.
Oh.
And when he found out that I didn't live, up on the corner in one of the beautiful homes, he just forgot all about me.
Oh, so he was a little snooty.
Just laugh about that. Don't say I didn't want to join the country club. I didn't have time. And I never did jump.
What kinds of groceries do you remember ordering from the grocery store?
Oh, it would be everything, bread and butter and everything but milk. I think that, first many years after I was married, we lived on the corner of Ann and Cedar, and there was a little grocery store in the corner just down from us, and I could just call her. And I could send Terry over there. He was only six somewhere, and get milk and that sort of thing from the store. That was the Pendleberry grocery.
Pendleberry?
Pendleberry.
Oh, that's a funny name.
And then later we moved into their apartment. It was a new place. To the apartment. And our reason for moving, our best friend had lost their job. They had a little boy the same age as us. And they didn't have any work or no money or anything. And they had to move out of where they were living, and they asked permission. We were living in his apartment just temporarily. And they asked permission to move into our house. So we let them until he kind of got settled and got a job again. And then we just traded with them. We took our own house back.
Can we go back to high school for just a minute? Now, you were doing the cooking for your family, right? Because where was your mother working when you were in high school?
I did. We learned. During those years, we did all the painting and the paper hanging and kept the house up in just first-class condition. My mother wouldn't have stood it otherwise. Mm. And so we learned to be very, very clean and very orderly.
Mm-hmm. What was her job? What was your mother's job?
My mother, she was a tailor.
Oh, a tailor. So where did she work? As a tailor. Where did your mother work as a tailor?
At home. That's why she chose that. She was a fine tailor, but she could do that and be at home with her family.
Oh.
And she was a very religious woman. She just, we all respected her for it. She was just a very, very I had a picture of her for the very first one.
Oh.
And she was in her 70s when she got to.
Oh. So what kinds of things would she tailor? How would that work? Would people bring their clothing? She's beautiful.
Her name was Theda. Uh-huh.
And people would bring clothing into the house for her to work on, or would she make clothes?
They'd come to the house for their measuring and try on and everything.
Uh-huh.
And she had a special room. After we moved to this big house up in the corner, she had a special room for her sewing and her measuring and everything. Oh, she had so much to do. She just really was busy.
What kinds of things? Would she make men's suits?
or anything, anything. And I grew up learning that. And so after I grew up, I studied tapering. And knew a lot about it. And
did she have a name for her business? Was it Theta Business?
Just give her name, Theta Pearson, and that would be it.
Uh-huh.
But she was well known.
Uh-huh. Loda, would you go to a store and buy clothes off the rack, or were all the clothes made by somebody? Like if you wanted a dress, could you go to Penny's, Montgomery Ward's, buy a dress, or were all those made at home?
No. Well, I can tell you one thing. I was over in Baker one day, and Clark over there had the most beautiful kind of rust-colored dress in the window. Oh, I just loved it. It was just beautiful. So it was on Sunday, so I could find. So after I got home, I called her. Told her, of course, I knew her pretty well, and I told her that I had seen that dress there, and I said, what size was it? And she said, well, I don't know. And she went and looked, and, well, I said, I was afraid to break it, it won't get large. But I went over anyway and got it and tried it on. I went home and bought the material and sat down and made the drawing of the dress and made it. And it was just as close to perfect as it is.
Did you use a pattern, or did you just make up
the
pattern?
I just made my pattern. Because I could do that. And so my sister and I, we had our skill going on it. And we'd go shopping together down in the Putnam store down here. And, oh, any of the nice stores that really had pretty things. And we'd pick out something that we liked very well, and then Francis would make a pattern for it, and I'd make it.
Where did you buy your fabric to make your clothes?
Well, that wasn't much, you know, wasn't too much. There was another girl in our class whose mother did a lot of sewing. You probably know them, too, I can't think. So anyway, when it came to graduation, this girl had found a suit and stuff on top that she wanted, and they simply couldn't afford it. So anyway, I had what I wanted, and it was okay. And when it came graduation time, this girl came with that suit on. It was just beautiful. And her mother said,
oh, her mother knew it.
Mm-hmm. And where it would have been expensive then would have been probably $70, something like that. Mm-hmm. Her mother had made it.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever I had was just equally nice.
Sure.
But my mother had made it.
When you went to make a dress, did you go to the store to buy the fabric? For the dress, was there a fabric place?
Oh, yeah, I bought most of my fabrics at the store.
Uh-huh.
For most of the dresses. Mm-hmm. And I have very few ready-made dresses because I could make them so easily.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so pretty. And I knew I could save a lot of money. Frances didn't want to do as much sewing as I did. So I would sew for her, and I would sew for my mother, too. But it's all fun.
Mm.
I still can do a lot of it, but my hands have been such that they don't stay flexible enough to do too much or anything, because my fingers get numb.
Were there dances at the high school that you would attend? Can you tell me some things about your memories about going to dances or
shows? Well, we always had the little books to write the parts. the reserve
dance program.
Dance programs, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was never a problem as far as I was concerned. But my sister was a much better dancer. And this other brother, an older brother, was just, he was the most perfect dancer. He was beautiful. And I was dancing with him one night, and he said, "God," he says, "but you can sure dance." I hate to tell you, Francis, it's better. Because I knew she was.
Were they at the high school? Or did the dances at the high school?
Oh, yeah, probably in high school. He wasn't, but mm-hmm. We were. Mm-hmm. But even after that, she was a better dancer than any of us, I think. She mm-hmm. was just born to dance. Mm-hmm.
So after you graduated from high school, what did you do when you finished high school?
Well, I wanted to go to college, naturally. It's just one of those things you wanted to. And there was no money. There just wasn't anything anyway. So that year, there was a Methodist school that was opened in Gooding, Idaho. And the man who was in charge of it, his last name was Terry. And he was trying so hard to build that school up and get it going. It was very beautiful. Buildings and everything were just lovely. But anyway, I got a job at that time, they had built a YMCA. And I wish it were here. You remember that? It was across from the fire station, right on that corner in where you go to pay your electric bill now and so forth. But that was this YMCA, and they had a swimming pool and a gymnasium, and they had organized gymnasium classes and everything. And so they hired me just like that to keep books. And well, because I'd studied that anyway, I did typing and shorthand and everything. So they hired me to do that, and I was making a pretty fair salary. When this Reverend Terry came to town and met me, and we were talking to my mother, and she told me that I really wanted to go to college. It was about a week after college had started, and that I really wanted to go, but there was no money to send me for me. He said, "Well, do a little figuring and see what I come up with." So he furnished transportation. He took me right to Gooding. And my sister lived at Twin Falls, which wasn't too far away. She bought me some pretty clothes and things. But he registered me there and got me a job in the president's office over there. So I had a job straight away. And I went all through that year there. And I liked it very much. It was a nice school. And I liked the teachers. Everything was good, and I did well with it because I was trying so hard to make up for it. And then my sister came over, and she was very wealthy, and she had taught a lot and then had married this wealthy man, and they got to talking about it, and they decided that they want me to go back there to school again, that they would pay all expenses at Oregon State and the teacher's college down there, and send me down there because I would get my teacher's certificate in another year, and I'd be able to work. So that's what I did, and I went a whole year down there and then got my teaching certificate, and then I was all set, and it worked fine. I kept on going to school. After a little while, I went to the University of California, Berkeley, and did some extra studying down there that I needed to brush up on. And so I did pretty well. and told, I taught a number of years, and then I finally got married, and...
When did you come back to Le Grand? When did you, was it after you were married, or
Well, let's
that?
See, when I was teaching, I taught at Hermiston and Adams. Oh, and then one year I was sick. I had a appendix. And was pretty frail, I just wonder. So I wasn't doing anything, and the county school superintendent, they don't have anymore, but he did that.
In Le Grand?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And he was a very dear friend of mine. And he came and asked me if I would go out to Palmer Junction. And they had a school out there, and the teacher they had hired from it had even opened a book at Christmas.
Oh,
and
no.
And found it out. So he just brought her to town and came in, and he said, "You're the only person I can think of could take that school over and get the kids through." Well, it was from a poor, poor family, and they were all lovely people. They were Quakers. And so
these were the students going to the school? Mm. The students going to the school were Quakers?
Yes.
Oh.
And it was a Quaker school. And they found me a place to board and room. It was an elderly man and his wife who never had any children. And I was so frail and so tiny that she did better for herself. That me up a little bit, and she did.
So now, this isn't Perry, right?
I think I weighed 135 pounds, the most I ever weighed in my life.
Was this by Elgin?
You went up the hill above Elgin, and at that time there was no road, but there is now. You can drive up there. And someone told me that that little schoolhouse was still there. I don't know.
Was this a one-room schoolhouse that you taught?
Just one room. Uh-huh. And I had something like, 18 students. But as Quakers, they were highly dedicated to their work, and they had to just do everything they could to get through with their grades, and they had two or three upper grade students who had to pass the Oregon State exam in order to get their credits for us. They worked, but they earned every bit of it. I worked with them.
So did you have elementary students and high school students in the same room?
No, it was just the elementary school, eighth grade. But those kids really worked at it, and many experience. I'm not going to go into detail on it, but I took this girl to town once when I came in. She had never seen a bathtub, and she had never had a pair of shoes fitted in a store. Oh. And when I told her to put her foot out, I didn't think I'm going to let that guy in. Fiddle with my bare foot, and, you know, right like that. I taught her a lot of things that way. And of course, they just loved me after that. But
what did your classroom look like inside?
Well, it was just simply a log cabin, and inside it had a big, what they used to call a round, what is it? Other
stove?
Yeah, it's a... there's a special name for these.
A wood stove?
A wooden stove, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And these older boys from the big family that were so poor would go over every morning and start the fire for me and make sure everything was clean, and they just tried so hard to help me out. And I was trying so hard to help them out.
Now, did they sit at desks, or did they sit at, in rows at desks?
No, they had someone, not anything fancy, but they were just rustic desks and seats.
And would you have a blackboard?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We had that. It was a couple of schools, and they had the regular books
did the state send them? The state send books?
Down here, yeah.
Did they have tablets with pencils, or how did they do their lessons?
I think they probably remember the old tablets that were just back. Not line, it just had lines on them, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they mostly were a heavier paper. And I would have to get them in town, take them out, then you get the regular in the whole.
Did you have a car, Loda? Did you have a car?
No, I was married then, but anyway. One of my brothers lived in Peoria, and the foreman on the railroad up there was an Indian, but his wife was a very nice white woman. And Gerald, my brother, talked to him and told him that I was going to be up at Palmer Junction. And he said, well, we're moving our boxcar when they live in up there, and you'd be welcome to come up and do your changing your clothes and everything up there. And I sort of knew them a little bit. And so that's what I did. I'd go up on the train, and then I'd get off there and go into their house and put in my warm coats and my boots and so forth, and have to walk uphill. And when the weather got too bad, there was somebody up there who had a sleigh and the horses, and would come down and pick me up and take me up there. That was a treat.
Oh, so you'd ride the school on the sleigh.
But I had about a mile and a half to walk from where I lived over to this little school.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good stroll, and laughed at her when I weighed myself after I'd been up there a while. It was really a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Did the students bring their lunches? Did they bring lunch in a brown bag, or was lunch prepared at the school?
Well, I think mostly that they lived close enough that they could go home for lunch. And they were so, when you describe them, they had so little and were so destitute than anything. The mother of this big family, and it was a big family, and she was expecting another baby, and she had absolutely nothing, just nothing at all. But my mother was a staunch ladies' aid person in town. So the next weekend that I came to town, I just told my mother about it. And the next weekend, I had a big, big suitcase full of everything you could think of for a baby.
Oh.
And this mother had just talked to me. Of course, the women are like that. They all had everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring that up, and oh, they were just undyingly grateful. It was just something they'd never had done for them before.
What kind of food did they eat? What was their main food?
I'm sure they all had gardens through the summertime. And I don't remember of them ever going really hungry. They didn't have anything fancy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they were you know, had enough to eat, they knew about that. The man, their husband, was a very, going back on the history, that this family were all college graduates, the parents were. Mm-hmm. And twice they had been totally burned out with everything they had. And then something else had happened, I don't know what was. But they were just left destitute and no way to build up, and that's why they climbed up kind of a, just a little place they could move into. I guess it was the Quaker deal there for them.
Was there a Quaker settlement in Palmer Junction? So there was a group of Quakers that lived up on Palmer Junction?
No, there. I think there is at now, but I don't think there was any sheep there. I know when I had a meeting like that they were just thrilled because they didn't have any other way to get it. I never will forget this. They hadn't had much fun, you know, they had worked awfully hard and everything. So this German couple that I lived with were the sweetest people, and she said, why don't you do something to cheer them up? They've just worked so hard and everything. And I said, well, okay, if you're going to be all right. So I gave them practice deal to them. I got them all together. I know we had that room full, and got them, quite a bunch of them together. And I said, now every group has to something to holler or yell or something to show that they belong to that group. So I'm going to show you a call that you can do that. So I started this out and tell them, well, now for your first mistake, au revoir. And next one, Tago. The next one, Siam. And they got so they could say it, and I'd say, they'd say, au revoir. I've done my Sam. And then when we all got together, I waited until we all got together that night, and I said, all right, you all know this. When I make signals, but tell me. And so when it started out, it was, oh, what a goose I am. And that started the party, and they just loved it. They had the best time. But they didn't dream that they were saying, oh, what a goose I am. So anyway, I had a lot of fun, my life anyway.
Mm-hmm. Now, when did you marry after you left that job at Palmer Junction, or did you get married before that?
Uh-huh. My husband was working, and he couldn't be free to take me back and forth. Several times he took me as far as Elgin, and I didn't have to take the train, and then I would walk on up. And one weekend when our landlady said she'd like to have him come up, he had a mania for separate cream and rich things like that, and homemade rolls and so forth. So I told her then, so this weekend that he came up, they met him with a sleigh and then brought him on up to the place. And of course they could share my room because we'd been married for several years, it wasn't to me. And then she just fed him that thick cream and homemade rolls, and she was grand about it. He always wanted to come back. But he enjoyed it. But then one other time when he came up, the train was Oh, what happened? Well, I was off the office.
The track.
And so he got down off the hill to the railroad station, and the train wasn't running, and so he had to walk 14 miles into town in order to get to work.
Where did he work?
We had our own truck, and at that time he worked for State Highway. But a little bit later, he had ready-mix cement. And the 100s of yards of different sizes of brick crush stone and things like that. It was a big deal down there on the side of the river.
Okay.
And then he weighed concrete pipe and just an awful lot. He gave the pipe up after that because it was too much for him, but he did have the concrete.
How did you and your husband meet?
How'd we meet?
Yeah.
I'm not sure anybody ever asked me that. This girl and I, who were teaching in the little country school there, this was before I mentioned the other school, but this was the first school I taught there.
Is that the one that was on Glass Hill? Was that the Glassville school?
And her, no, it was, well, it was the first year I taught after I got my teacher's certificate. Uh-huh. This girl and I were rooming together. It was a little country school, really nice one. It was a two-room school.
Where was that?
Was this Hermiston?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a two-room school, and the man was principal of the two rooms, and I had the first four grades, and then this girl and he had the upper grade. And it was a nice school. It was really a nice building and everything, all the modern facilities. And so it worked out fine. But anyway, there was it was 3 miles, or more than 3 miles from town. And so we just had a room out there from the person. And if we went anyplace, we had to figure out our own transportation. So that had happened one night. One afternoon or something. We started out to our rooming house, and there'd had a dust storm. Oh, the dust was just thick, and was a bad place to could be after we got to the house. But we were just trying to get there, and so and behold, there was a shabby pickup truck stuck in the sand between our place we were looking for. And there were two boys trying to get the deal out of that. So we met them and helped them a little bit, finally got them out of it. And one of the boys was one that I went with all the rest of the day. And then Cecil was the other one, and he had a girlfriend. So we went together. They both loved to dance, and so did we. So we just had a lot of fun like that. And I went with this other boy all the rest of the year. Nothing serious. It was just dancing, a lot of fun. And she went with this other boy. And then when school was out, I moved to Adams and was teaching over there. And that year, my mother and my brother, who had gotten mad at the principal of the high school in LeGrand and had quit, and didn't finish. So my mother and I persuaded him to come to Adams, and we found an awfully nice house to live, and come over and stay with us, and finish his high school diploma. So he went along with that. Oh, I've been teaching there at Adams. He loved it. It was like he said, it was a big toad in a small pond. He didn't have to study. He never did have to. He had a photographic memory. He didn't look at the figures about it. So anyway, he graduated from high school and getting along fine. I moved to the end of my story.
And Cecil. Oh,
I was in Pendleton one day shopping, and I met this man walking down the street. And he said, "Hey, Loaded, aren't you going to speak to me?" I said, "Sure." And then I realized who it was, and it was Cecil. And I spoke to him, and he asked me what I was doing. And I told him I was teaching out of that. And he said, "Oh, I'm working just really close out there." "Can I stop and see you?" I said, "Yeah, why don't you on Monday night bring your presents and everything?" Just kidding. So he said, "Fine, that sounds great." And he was a lot of fun anyway. So Monday came. And he didn't show up. So my mother kidded me about it, and she said, "Well, that's one thing you got to stick up for." She was just laughing about it. We all were, you know. It was just one of those things. We didn't care. And about 3 weeks later, my mother was cleaning out some newspapers. She got me kind of piled up there. And she called me and she said, "Come here, I'm going to show you something." And when she went in, she showed me in this paper that it said that Cecil's father had been in an accident up on Cabbage Hill that day, the day he was supposed to be over here, and had been killed in this tractor accident. And I was, I knew that would be terrible, because his mother was in Hot Lake with a heart condition. And I knew that the first thing he'd do was head for Hot Lake so that he'd see, get older and get a hold of his mother. So all I could do was write a note and address it to the nurse, and I knew he'd be out there. And then, quite some time after that, he came back over and came to see me and told me all about it then. And so anyway, I started going with him, and I kept on going a couple of years. And I didn't think anything about his bishop. And it just happened one of those things. He was a very fine person.
What was Hot Lake like during those years?